Welcome to the Real Estate Trainer Podcast with your host, Brian Eisenhower. This podcast is brought to you by Eisenhower Coaching and Consulting. ICC provides customized and structured coaching and training programs for real estate agents and team leaders, representing many of the top producing agents in North America. ICC also offers broker and owner consulting on agents recruiting, training, and retention. For more info, visit EisenhowerCoaching.com or find us on Facebook.
So I had another issue a couple of you had brought up. I think you're all going to love this today. So I'm gonna hijack this a little bit and talk about a concept that will apply to all of you at one point, even though it may not think it's going to apply to you. And it's certainly going to help a lot of your understanding out there. So I really want to talk about a concept out there that I think is all going to help you understand how real estate teams work. And even if you're not on a real estate team and you have no desire to be on one or ever start one, which is totally fine by me, by the way, I do want you to know how they work at their core, because you're going to be working around them and with them for the rest of your career. And so I want you to get some of these key components that I think will help you understand how they function and whether or not they could ever be a fit for you, either as being on one or running one. And if you're ever talking about working with another agent that's considering one, it's important to understand how they work. And I think you're going to be surprised. I want to talk about one key component of a real estate team here that will dominate whether teams are successful or not. So what I'm going to talk about actually is the matching standard, John, and I know Sean knows this one well. So what I want to, and this, I mean, this has a lot of uses for you guys out there, but I think it's going to pull the curtains back for so many of you right now to kind of understand how these things work. It starts out as the matching standard for a real estate team really starts out as a method of lead distribution. It does so many different things other than that. It's like a little magical cure-all for all pills. And Sean, who I've been talking with, he actually coaches for Eisenhower Coaching and Consulting, and he coaches a lot of big teams. And one of the things that we find out when these coaching clients come to us, a lot of times big teams come to us, teams that sell hundreds of houses a year, but they're either not making money or they're losing a lot of people or somehow they're having a hard time and they're stuck. And oftentimes we have found out that by just putting this matching standard in place, it solves 90% of their problems. In fact, it's preventative. It solves the problems so they don't even have them anymore. So it's proactive in that sense. And it really is implemented, like I said, as a basis of lead distribution. So let me show you what this looks like. And this is kind of hard to get your head around. So understanding this concept, bear with me. It'll take a little bit of time, but you'll start to see how it all works. Because I get so many questions about how to run a brokerage, how to run a real estate team. And there are all these little one-off situations. I have an agent, they want to be on this split. What's the right split? Or they're producing this, as if there's just some one-all answer for all of that. And usually, like anything else, like if you say, I want to lose 30 pounds, well, you can find a way to lose 30 pounds and you might lose 30 pounds. But unless you change your whole lifestyle, stop drinking, stop smoking, start working out, watching your diet, you're not going to live this new 30 pounds lighter life. And that's what the matching standard is for a real estate team. It's changing your whole lifestyle, your whole org structure, so that the team runs healthy. And you want to know why some teams, you know, succeed at a much higher level than so many that fail, because God, it's a high percentage that fail. And oftentimes it's because they don't have a standard similar to this in place. There's a few different ways it can work. And we've coached it with, as far as I know, all of them. But I want to show you right now how it works at its core. So enough of the prepping. And you can see this is a bit of a scoreboard. I'll just let you know it's a real big scoreboard, but I have highlighted this one little section. So this is one little metric on a team scoreboard, okay? And the team scoreboard, just so you know, this is a very old format. I don't usually use anymore, but it's easy. This is what I used to teach off of. So bear with me as we use it. But you can see on here on this scoreboard, it's very large and we track all kinds of stuff on it for a real estate team. Okay. Now I've got, you'll notice a lot of my wife's team and my wife's name. If you guys happen to know my wife, understand I made up all these numbers. And because I'm not creative, I just grab people on her team and threw their names in there. So this has nothing to do with them other than I have a lack of creativity and just wanted to steal some names. But you can see as you go down here, this tracks everything from their sphere of influence contacts to how many people they're growing their sphere of influence by each week, to how many open houses they're having, to all the lead follow-up tasks they're doing, to how many online lead contacts they're making, their response time to inbound leads, how many recruiting appointments they're having. All their conversion measures are on here, listing appointments set, had, signed, buyer agency agreements signed, contracts written, how many onboarding training videos they're all doing, because you can give agents all kinds of training to do, yourselves included. And you'll only do a small percentage of them, if any of it at all, unless someone holds you accountable to it. How often they're shadowing other members of the team. So the new agents are shadowing different key tasks for buyer's agents, like showings, buyer consultation appointments, conducting open houses, conducting home inspections, writing offers, negotiating counters. We're making sure they've shadowed five people each. Then we get down to our lag measures, which is where we started. How many under contract year to date, pending volume year to date, closed year to date sales, and closed year to date volume. So these have already happened, right? And I'm going to zoom in a little bit closer on this, because I really want you to see this one statistic is the most important metric that we track on a real estate team scoreboard. And again, good real estate teams will meet every single week to go over these, okay? All the numbers on the scoreboard. So we are running a business, right? By design. So this is something that all the real estate clients that we coach meet with their team and their coach on a weekly basis to go over the scoreboard to make sure we're doing what we should be doing to succeed in this business, okay? Now, what I'm doing is highlighting one little component of it, which is a lag measure. It's a results-based indicator, which means it's something we can't act on. It's tracked something that already happened in the past, right? The activity-based indicator might be making five contacts a day, 25 a week to your sphere of influence. That's an activity. That's an activity-based indicator, which means we can track that every single day and we can control that. Results are a little harder to control, right? Because they're based upon activities that were performed a long time ago, and we have to have faith that the results are going to come. They're very motivational though, I'll tell you that. And this one actually becomes the basis for most real estate teams, and that's this closed year-to-date total. Okay, so now we're going to take a look at the numbers to explain it to you. You can see the team leader of the team, her name is Robin. And at this point, halfway through the year, let's say, she's closed 35 transactions total. She's the team leader, so generally she's got a successful business, right? She's got more business than she can handle. And she's got overflow business that she's giving to the other members of her team. In this case, she is structured where she takes all the listings on the team, and then she has buyer's agents that work for her, okay? You don't have to be that type of structure. That is probably the most common structure out there. There are structures out there that are called hybrid structures that have gotten increasingly popular, albeit I'm not sure that they're working any better, where you let agents on the team take listings too, right? And usually that's done, I'm gonna call a spade, that's usually done because the lead agent doesn't know how to overcome that recruiting objection. The recruit says, I want to take listings too. And he says, well, I want to get agents on my team, so I'm going to let you do it. And that's why we have that structure, just to let you know. Not because it's the best structure, it's because we couldn't recruit unless we gave the listing, we allowed the listings to be taken by members of the team. Now, I will say, as teams get larger, allowing agents on the team to take listings too becomes much more economically sensible as you get longer. Or as you get larger, your profit margin will go down. There's going to be more listings than the team leader can take at a certain point. I mean, an individual listing agent really has a hard time taking more than 100 listings a year. That's a lot of listing appointments to go on and a lot of listings to convert and manage. So typically, we're going to have a buyer agent situation up until that point, and then we can make a decision after that if we want to start allowing, you know, one other agent to be a listing agent and then grow a team of listing agents and keep the buyer's agent separate, or we keep the hybrid structure, which means we let everybody start taking listings. Okay. And there's pros and cons to that, backwards and frontwards, a whole different conversation. It's what I love about real estate teams and real estate productivity coaching It's very, very intellectual. So there's a lot of different theories and schools of thought in there. There's not one model or one right or wrong way. So please understand that. In this case, Robin down here has closed 35 years to date. She brought 26 of them. So she, the team leader, brought 26 in, and 9 of her listings were provided to her by the rest of the team. Okay. I don't really care. So in other words, she brought 26 agent generated closings, and the other members of the team brought her 9 listings. That's team generated. Okay. Let's don't worry about Robin too much because she's the team leader of this team. And it's a little confusing when we look at her. However, if we look at all these other members of the team here in my mock scoreboard, you can see we're tracking their year-to-date production, how many units they've each closed. And then we're breaking that down into how much of those were agent-generated closing versus team-generated. So for example, here's Melissa. She's closed 25 units year-to-date. She brought 10 of those to the team herself, from her own sphere of influence, let's say. And then 15 of them were provided from the team to Melissa, which means team generated leads would be leads like maybe an online lead that was paid for by the team, or the team leader's sphere of influence member. So a member of their SOI that maybe the team leader, Robin, listed the home, but had Melissa help those same clients as a buyer. Okay. Those would be team generated, okay? And that's very important. So I'm gonna just take a minute to, we're gonna come back to this, don't you worry, but I really wanna make sure you guys understand that. So determining the difference between an agent generated closing and a team generated closing is crucial, and it's a lot harder than any of you think, okay? Because I can tell you right now, if you run a real estate team, organization, or brokerage, and you don't track these numbers, you're gonna have retention problems. You're gonna lose agents left and right. I can tell you right now, and there is no exception. So if you're not tracking this and making your team members aware of where their bread is buttered, that they're getting a certain percentage of their business from the team or brokerage, then they're thinking you've done nothing, that they've done all the work. They converted the lead. Because they agents don't understand a few things. Number one, they don't understand commission splits. They think they do. All they care about is commission splits. They want the best commission split possible. Okay, that's the first mistake most agents make that gets them ran over in this world, is because they don't know how to run a business. They only worry about their costs. I want to pay less. So they're split sensitive. That makes them very, very bad business people. Most real estate agents are horrible business owners, yet they're independent contractors that run their own businesses. It's one of the weird, rare places out there where you can just sign up and start a business. That's why we've got so few, people ask, why do so few agents succeed? It's because of this. They're not business leaders. They don't have that mentality. They don't understand that the richest people in the world have the most expenses. That those people understand the importance of investing in their business, right? Like I always say, Bill Gates, you know, when he was running and started Microsoft, I mean, he probably had a 1% profit margin. That's a 1% commission structure, okay? But he might make $101 billion per year, but if he has $100 billion in costs, he's only making 1%. So he's got a 1% split. With $100 billion in costs and $101 billion in revenue, he's still making $1 billion. That's a lot of money. But he didn't worry about his expenses. In fact, he let his expenses go up to 99% of his revenue. That's a high amount of expenses. That's a very low profit margin. So the people that have the lowest profit margins, the worst splits, tend to make the most net income in the world. So it's really hard for agents to get. And I don't expect them to get it. You know what I mean? And they don't. For the last, you know, 30 years I've been in the business, I've never seen them get it. I know they didn't get it before that. And I don't see them getting it. In fact, commission structures are just getting cheaper and cheaper for the agent. And so more and more agents are paying smaller commission amounts to their brokers. Yet, here's the kicker. More and more agents are failing. A smaller percentage of agents are succeeding at a higher level. You're getting these mega agents now that are selling so much, and the average Joe just can't compete. And all they're doing is running around watching their expenses. The last thing they're going to do is put money into their business, incur expenses and really compete with these top agents, they've got no hope of doing it. Does that make sense? So that's the first thing. Agents are extremely split sensitive. So we have to worry about that at all times. And if you're an agent and you're not self-aware that you're hyper split sensitive, then this is going to be a hard conversation for you. It's going to be a hard career for you until you can get over that. Just here to tell you, that's how important it is. We don't like math. We don't like spreadsheets. We don't like doing our taxes. We don't like doing our books. We don't like doing any of that. We don't like putting a profit and loss together. So what do we do to make ourselves feel like we are competent in doing our due diligence? We just try to avoid expenses. I won't have to mess with any of that stuff if I avoid expenses. Does that make sense? So very, very, very important. Okay. So next, moving on. If we go back into our scoreboard, which I want to share with you, back to this matching standard, the second most important thing that we need to get through here is that agents don't understand the difference between lead conversion and lead generation. Okay. Lead generation means you created the lead out of thin air. Okay. That's lead generation. That means you created that lead out of thin air, but no one else had to pay for a lead that you called. No one else had to pay for an auto dialer that you used. You created it. So it was your relationship with your sphere of influence, with your past client, with maybe you went out and door knocked, didn't need the team for that, you know? So the test is whether it's agent generated versus team generated is, did the team generate it? Okay. I don't care if you're the agent and you did all the work converting it. Quite frankly, I can get converters all day long. Real estate is made up. Every realtor thinks they're an amazing converter. You give me a client, I can turn them into I can turn it into a client, you know, but how do I get the client to appear in front of me? That's the hard part. Like, how do I make the people come in the door? Well, to get them to come in the door, I got to have a listing. To have a listing, I got to have a team so I can sit there listing so that people come in the door. Or how are they going to look at my listings online? Well, I got to have listings online. So the team has all the listings. So how can I get that online listing traffic? Or maybe I got to pay for the leads online. Well, either I'm going to pay for them or the team's going to pay for them. If the team pays for them, that's a team generated lead that if you close, you just converted it, which means you set the buyer consultation. You showed them the property, you wrote the offer, you handled the inspections, blah, blah, blah. Point of the matter is, all you did was convert the lead, you didn't generate it. So understand, for a team generated lead to be treated as team generated, the team has to show that they converted it. And what we use to determine that is what we call the but-for test. This is a very common test used in law in a lot of countries. If we determine possession, we determine, but for the existence of the team, would the lead have been created? Okay? So, but for the team, if this agent were all on his own without the team, would he have gotten the lead? I can tell you right now, if it was a little Zillow lead paid for by the team, no way, because the team paid for it. So, but for the team, there would have been no lead. If it's an SOI member of the team leader, that you was referred to you, well, that's clear. Obviously, that's a team-generated lead, because but for the team, you never would have been referred that lead. A tough one that a lot of teams go both ways on is the open house, okay? Because technically, but for the team's listing, there wouldn't have been an open house for the agent to sit, and if we got a lead at the open house, technically, it'd be a team-generated lead. That's the only one that I like to give to the agent. And I'll say, you know what? I want agents doing open houses. Yes, I agree, because it's team generated, because the team generated the listing, you wouldn't have been able to have it, but I want my agents holding open houses. So I will let agents that sit open houses count any closings they get from leads at open houses as agent generated. Okay. And that's important.
And This is probably one of the biggest controversial items that I run into with teams and brokerages, mm-hmm. that they really want to count that their own. But I agree. I think they need to have, that needs to be theirs. They're working hard for it. I get that it's that's the team's listing, but still they worked their butt off to get that. I think that's a great innov.
I like to give them that one. I'm with you, Sean. I like to give them that one. I like to see people holding a lot of open houses, because that's a major pillar of income for most top producers. There's a lot of people who don't like open houses. They're typically called low producers. But there's a lot of top producers out there that, that sell the vast majority, the lion's share in your MLS. And those know how important open houses are a pillar of business. They're big. That's usually, for most top producers, top three or four lead sources. Open houses fall in there. And if they're not for you, I'd really look at it because it's a big one. It always has been. That's why they've been so big. Make sense? So I'd like to see that. Here's why. Here's why I keep it like that. So I want to show you, I want to wrap this up together because there's a general standard in real estate, okay? And we call this the matching standard. I don't put this on here where it says closed year to date, but I could call this the matching standard very easily. See, right now, Melissa has closed 25 year to date. She's brought in 10 in from her own sphere of influence or maybe an open house. And the team has given her 15. Okay. And to me, this is actually pretty perfect because the standard is that the agents are going to try, emphasis on try, to match the team's production. Okay. So right now, Melissa is trying. She's not behind too much. She's closed 10 of her own and 15 the team is generating. So she's not matching. If she were matching, she'd be right at 15 here. She would have closed 30 deals by now instead of 25. So she's getting matched. And that, so this, so she's not keeping up with her end of the deal right now. The team's really far ahead of her. Does that make sense? Now, if we flip-flop this a little bit, okay? So let's say Melissa had 15 closed over here. Okay. And or let's say 20. So let's say Melissa had 20 closed over here and she had only received 10 leads from the team. See that? I would consider Melissa a pretty significant flight risk right now. Like if I were to look at this team before I even had a coaching call, I would look down here and I would say, you're about to lose this Melissa agent. She's about to leave you. Make sense? Everybody see why I can see that? It's because she's closed 30 deals. She's only gotten 10 from the team. She's on a 50-50 commission split, which is the normal commission split out there. It's where most top teams are. So if you've ever been a brokerage or ran a team and you had people on higher splits, what's your problem? Most teams are pulling it off in a 50-50. So if you think a 50-50 is too low, you're missing something right now up in your head. I'm trying to tell you that. Like you're missing something. Most of you are missing something. What you think is it's those damn ungrateful agents. No, it's you. You're missing something. What you're missing is what I'm about to tell you. Okay? So make sure we understand this is, when I say this is conceptual, I mean this is way more conceptual than our industry is prepared to be. So I need your thinking caps on, okay? Right now, Melissa, we switched this up. She is considering leaving this team because she's brought 20 in and only received 10. She's on a 50-50 split, okay? If she were to leave the team, she could keep 100% of her 20 deals and she'd only lose 50% of these 10. It actually makes sense for her mathematically to leave. She'll make more money if she were on her own. Real estate team leaders, we can never let this happen. If you see this starting to happen, one of your agents is getting ahead of you, you've got a problem. And we need to stop it. We need to start sending Melissa leads quickly. Like that's when we start funneling Melissa lead after lead because one of our rock stars is turning into a big rock star. She's building her business the way most real estate teams and leaders want agents to build it. They're building their sphere of influence, their book of business. We want to reward that. How do we reward that in real estate? We stay ahead of them by shifting all of our good leads to her because she's earned it. Because we got to stay ahead of her. It's fair. It's not, it's distributing leads. We're not doing it by religion. You know, we're not saying because she's a Catholic, we're giving her leads. We're not doing that. It's not based on sexual orientation. It's not based upon race, ethnicity, seniority, nepotism. It's based upon who earned it and who's doing the work. And if you have a real estate team where you're trying to encourage your people to build their sphere of influence, stay in contact with their sphere of influence, bring business to the team from their sphere of influence, then you reward them back by your lead distribution. And you prevent them from getting too far ahead. And if any of these other team members have a hard time with it, then, you know, which they usually don't once they realize why and how you're doing it. Like, how do you get upset at Melissa? You know what I mean? Like, let's take Jessica down here. Okay, so Jessica probably knew we're on the team. Jessica's closed 8 year to date, right? She's only brought one into the team, but seven she has converted from team generated leads. So if she starts griping to me about all the things that agents love to gripe about, what are the main things, right? Split sensitive. I need a better commission split. I need more leads. I want to take listings. Okay? Those are ignorant complaints. They're ignorant. They don't know this. Okay? So if Jessica's saying that, Robin is going to look up to Jessica and say, hey, Jessica, we got a problem. Let's go over the numbers in private, hopefully. We're going to say, right now, Melissa is killing me. You know, she is out. She has generated 20 of her own deals. So I'm trying to get as many deals as I can to Melissa to reward her. So right now I'm shifting things to Melissa. You, on the other hand, Jessica, I mean, you're not doing your part of the matching standard. Right now I'm not doing my part with Melissa. So I need to get more leads to Melissa so that we're close to even. I mean, we don't need to be 40 deals end of the year, 20 from me, 20 from Melissa, but we got to be kind of close to make it make sense. Jessica, you're not close with your end of the deal. Like right now you've closed 8 deals. 7 of those are from me, however, right? So maybe you've made $40,000 this year off your 7 deals and you want to make more, right? Yes, right? Well, let me tell you, a better commission split isn't going to make a dent in that. But you know what would make a dent in that? You closing another $40,000. Because right now, if you were to match me with those 7 deals, and you were to do your part and bring 7 deals from your own sphere of influence, you would have closed 14 deals this year so far, which would be another $40,000, which means you'd be making $80,000. So stop whining about the listing. Stop whining about the commission split. Earn it. Earn it. Put the, you know, match us and do your part first before we're going to start talking about that. Now, with Melissa, we've got a new problem. Like, we have two ways we can handle this problem. Number one, we can start trying to get Melissa a lot more leads and make sure that we stay in front of her, which is typically what we do. It is very rare you're going to have an agent like Melissa get this far out in front of everybody, but it happens. Usually it's pretty easy for the team to match the agent's production. It's shockingly easier than most team leaders think it will be, right? So what ends up happening is agents that end up becoming rock stars by generating a ton of business from their own sphere of influence, like Melissa did once I changed the numbers around there, it can get impossible for the team leader to stay ahead of the matching standard. Like if you got an agent like Melissa who's bringing, let's say, 30 deals from her own sphere of influence to the team, it might be hard to give her 30 deals. Hell, she may not want 30 more deals. That's 60 deals a year. She may not want to work that hard, you know, to stay in front of her and make the matching standard work. So what I have seen and recommend is, in that rare case, that is the only time I will start giving increased commission splits, is when someone on the team wins the matching standard to a level where the team can't keep up with them anymore. Like Melissa there, she's running off 30 listings to 10 provided by the team. We might need to let her have a 70-30 commission split on her sphere of influence and still let her take 50-50 on the team lead. So we'll make an exception for that one person. And it doesn't have to be a secret deal. It can be a very public deal that we tell to everyone on the team and tell them why and explain to them, hey guys, you guys too, if any of you do what Melissa did and outpace the team on our matching standard so that your agent generated closings far exceed the team generated closings, if you do that, then maybe you've earned your way to get an increased commission split like Melissa. And it's not going to happen that much because it's a small percentage of agents that succeed. Now, I will say agents on real estate teams generally have a much higher percentage of succeeding than those that try to do it on their own. There's no doubt about that. I mean, they get a lot of leads, support, mentoring, and all that kind of stuff. So your success rate's, you know, clearly a lot higher. That's why they're popular. However, when they do happen, make sure that you're receiving leads from them because then it makes no sense, right? Like when you say, how could Melissa, let's go back to Melissa really quick. When you say, how could she handle a 50% commission split? You know, I wouldn't handle a 50% commission split. Well, let's go through here and take a look and let's make these numbers a little bit more accurate. Let's say it was 18 team generated leads and 16, and that would be a total of 34 closings for the course of the year. Okay, so she would do 34 deals, 16 she brought to the team herself, the team gave her 18. That's a great mix. If you can get someone to do this, this is rare for an agent to be keeping up with the team that well, but the team's still ahead of them in a perfect world, which doesn't happen very often. This is great, okay? So do you understand if Melissa at this point were going to leave this team, she'd be financially crazy because she'd be walking away right out the gate from 18 team generated deals. And she'd know about it because she'd be seeing it every week in the team meeting, maybe not talking about every week, but it'd be up there and it'd be passively aggressively reminding Melissa that if she went out and did this on her own or even went to another brokerage or another team, that more than 50% of her income, she'd lose right off the bat. More than 50%. Right off the bat, that her income will go away. So if she went on her own, I don't think she'd be on a 100% commission split. My guess is if she went out on her own, you know, she'd have to pay some commission split. So that would be an increase in cost. She'd have to do her own administrative work too. The team, you know, do a lot of our admin work. So that's going to make it hard for her to lead generate and keep her production up because now she's got to handle all her transactions. And there's quite a few of them, 34 of them there. So that makes it even harder for that. Then you might need to pay, you know, commission strips, caps, splits, all those fees that you have to pay on your own too. So it makes it crazy. The only reason it makes financial sense to leave a team with the matching standard is if you're outpacing the team. But if you're not outpacing the team with more agent-generated closings than they are, and you leave the team, you're walking. You're making a negative financial decision because you're going to leave more of the team's business on the table, more of your commission dollars than you get by walking away. Mathematically, it's impossible to prove. So if you wonder, like, there's a lot of people out there saying, there's no way I'd be on a 50-50 split. But again, Melissa closed 34 deals this year. Melissa, you know, based on those numbers, is going to make about $150,000. There aren't many agents making $150,000 early in their career. So that's the idea there with that matching standard, right? Now, let me show you how this works too. So someone who says, I don't want to be on your team because I don't want to be on a 50 split, or I want to leave your team because I don't want to be on a 50-50 split, understand that's what we're going to explain. Hey man, you know, we're matching you. So like, if you generate a client, even if it's a listing and I take it as the listing agent, you have generated one agent generated closing, which means I got to give you one back to match it. In fact, I'm always going to give you more than you give me, which means you're always going to be better off in that 50% split. Make sense? Because I'm always making it up. Now, if you're one of those people that loves to take listings and I'm not a team or I'm not big enough yet to allow listings to be taken, there aren't a lot of valid reasons why you should want to take listings anyway. Number one would be money, and that's the easiest one to overcome because if you give me a listing, I'm going to give you a buyer side makeup for it. So we're going to be a wash right there. Now, where it gets really good though is if you give me a listing and you represent them as the buyer, because now you've brought a listing side and a buyer side to the team, which you mean you've brought two agent generated closings to us, which means now I got to give you two sides back. So not only are you going to get the buy side, you're going to get the side I give you that matches the buy side and the side I give you that matches the list side, which means you get three sides for giving me that listing. So financially, it makes plenty of sense. If it's just because you want to take the listings, then I would recommend, or they're your friends and you don't want to give them up, then I'd recommend going with a listing agent, like shadowing the team leader, being a part of it. Most good team leaders will let you be a part of all those listings. You can communicate with the clients as much as you want. And typically, you know, hang your sign, you know, your name from the sign on the listing. You can take all the leads for the listing. That's fine. All that kind of stuff. You're going to learn all that, all of that. The whole key though, there's no way. The reason I said agents were split sensitive is because this is hard for you. And the fact that it's hard for you, this shouldn't be hard for you. It's hard for you because you're conditioned to keep a low split. But I can tell you, most agents on real estate teams far at lower splits far outproduce solo agents at high splits. Okay? All the time. So very, very powerful that way. Okay? So make sure we understand that. So the matching standard should overcome agents' need to take listings on the team. I don't understand, you know, financially at least, that's for certainly sure. And unless you're not letting them do some of the activities, I don't understand what they're missing out of based on the experience there. The commission structure, you know, again, you should make more money this way because you're always making up the 50% they're paying to you with another lead that you're giving to them. And you just got to stay ahead of them. And that's not that hard to do. That's why we call it the matching standard. It's actually quite easy for a team leader to stay ahead of all the other agents. And once it becomes hard, again, then we start looking at adjustments to make sure that, you know, they can be retained and make a place for them on the team, if that makes sense. So remember the but-for standard. If we're determining whether a lead is agent-generated versus team-generated, we say, but for the existence of the team, would the lead have been generated? If the answer is no, then it wouldn't have been without the team, then it's a team-generated lead in closing. If the answer is, yeah, it would have been, I didn't need the team for that. I mean, that was my own cousin. Then, hey, that's an agent-generated lead and it goes under that category. Again, this doesn't mean that, you know, we pay different splits based on these categories. It just is how we track for lead distribution because we know the agent that's bringing in the most business needs to receive the most business for a production-centric team and organization with a healthy culture that's fair. That's how it works. Okay? Does that make sense to everybody? And do you guys see how it keeps everyone honest too? It keeps the team leader honest because if we're halfway through a year and Melissa's, you know, closed 25 deals of her own and only 10 from the team, now I know she's about to leave. I need to get ahead of Melissa. Also understand halfway through the year, if the tables are turned and, you know, it's 8 deals Melissa's done and only 7 of them are from the team, or sorry, 7 are from the team and only 1's from her, now she needs to get her butt in gear. I'd be meeting with her and saying, hey, I know you're excited. I know you're busy. I know you're showing a lot of property, but you're not building your business. So let's do the work. Let's get your people into our CRM. Let's get, you know, regular emails, mailers, and all kinds of social media communication out according to our team's annual database contact plan. So you start bringing in business from the people you know. So business now comes to the team from an agent and you don't create an agent that's wholly dependent. Because that's the worst, is create a bunch of agents on your team that are dependent on the team for leads. And they don't bring any business themselves. That means they don't do any work themselves to grow their own business, which means they just they become little needy socialists, basically. They just say, I need. What are you going to give me? Where's my next lead? And they get that terrible cultural mentality because we don't have a system that helps support them and hold them accountable and rewards them for generating business themselves. I mean, no one, I don't care who you are, when you get your license to get into real estate, you're not thinking, wow, I just want to be a telemarketer for someone else and convert leads from people I don't even know. No one thinks that when they get their license, yet they become very dependent on those lead sources. What they think when they get their license is, man, I want to grow a book of business of people I know that use me, that call me, and I become the realtor of choice, so business just comes to me. Well, if that's the case, like it is for most people, then we need to create a team culture that fosters that type of productivity and lead generation activity and rewards our agents for it. And that's what the matching standard does, if that makes sense to everybody. All right, guys. Well, I went a little bit longer than my allotted 45 minutes, but I hope that helps you guys with understanding how these teams work and when agents go on them, what it looks like. If you're running a team and you do not have any type of standard in place where the agents on the team are supposed to generate business from their own sources, I highly recommend, it doesn't have to be a hardcore standard. None of my teams that I coach make it a hardcore, like we're not going to cut you if you don't, you know, if you're Jessica on this one where you're way behind. No, it's just a standard. It's there. It's like a goal to shoot for. So we're not going to fire people if they don't do it. But just having the standard up there and being aware of the scoreboard helps agents on the team prevent themselves from blaming and getting in denial. Instead, they tend to own the problem and realize it's them that needs to actually do the work and keep up with what the team's providing them. So it does them a huge service to getting their career on the right track as a result of it. If that makes sense. All right. That sound good to everybody? All right. So that's the matching standard. Thank you guys. I appreciate it. Now that works with any commission structure, any team structure. It's just a core concept that I want you guys to have in there. And so you can understand that we're seeing this is kind of the secret sauce that makes teams work.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Real Estate Trainer Podcast, sponsored by Eisenhower Coaching and Consulting. For more information about real estate coaching or to watch Brian's training videos, check out therealestatetrainer.com or find us on social media. And remember, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you get the latest episodes as soon as they're available.